This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. We are back with our coverage of Mike Flanagan's Midnight Mass with episodes 3 and 4 titled Book 3, Proverbs, and Book 4, Lamentation. These episodes really advance the damn story, y'all. So let's get into it. Vampires.
Who would have thought, except for me?
No, yeah, right?
I did not believe that for a second when I first said it. But, you know, the blood was all you. And that's just going to be, it seems like, the main point for everything, right? It's just all about the blood.
What are you talking about, vampires? I thought it was angels.
Yeah, right?
I thought we were talking about angels over here.
Still could be a thing. Just a weird take on it. Like, do you think we're going to get a name drop of vampires?
I don't know if they're going to name drop it, but I think it should be assumed at this point it's vampires.
Okay. Listen, demons are fallen angels, baby. In case you didn't know.
We talked about that on Wynonna.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about our theories from the last two really quick and just say how wrong or right we were.
The obvious ones are that Pruitt and Monsignor are the same. So easy.
Yeah. So,
and only me and Paul got that little fist bump through the fucking Zoom.
Oh my God, I'm the one who said it first.
I have it written right here. Kathleen went first. She said they are not going to be the same person.
Only because I wanted to
Jimmy
go with
saying it's not the same person.
I'm the one who put it out there on the pod that they're probably the same person.
I might have to listen to that one back.
But at the end, when you had to guess, you said no, they are not.
Because I was hoping that they weren't.
No, I totally got you. I honestly, for the longest time, didn't believe just because I felt like it was so obvious right in your face. But yeah, we ended up getting the whole story from book three. That was like the whole narration over the series of events of the episode. And it was pretty cool. I mean, he's in a Jerusalem, or what is it? Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And he's walking in the desert and just finds a cave.
Well, to your point, you actually said is one of your theories, like, what if he is on his trip and he finds his youth somehow? Remember, you did say that. I mean, you didn't bring up finding a monster or a vampire, but you kind of talked about it. I mean, I watched episode 3. I had to go right into episode 4, but I was actually a little upset at episode 3 until episode 4 happened, because I thought it was too easy. I really did. I thought it was too easy, and that's why my theory was that they weren't the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they were the same person, I was like, but then when you start finding out other stuff, like, our other theories were about the monster, and our theory was that he was controlling the monster and the monster was doing his bidding, but really it's the opposite, which is very cool.
The monster continued being young, and it's just, I feel like I'm comfortable saying that if this sticks the landing in any way, shape, or form, I'm already ready to say I liked it better than Bly Manor.
Okay.
Definitely not Haunting of Hill House.
Right.
Still can be better than Haunting of Hill House. Most likely will not. But just how this is going, like, I spoke a lot about in the first one, how I like religion in fantasy and shows and stuff like that. And I think this is doing it for me so freaking well. Like, I loved all the desert clips. And, like, I had no idea where it was going to go. I figured by the end we were going down the road of Pruitt being Father Paul, but not in the way that they took it.
Yeah.
And then, so I have so many comments about the monster itself. And, like, how does the voice changing thing play into any of this?
I was just gonna say that there's no,
it doesn't make any
mimic
sense
thing yet at all,
right?
Kathleen, go ahead.
I was gonna say, before we move past just the reveal of Pruitt and Paul being the same person, I think that it's nice that they did it in episode 3. There's 7 episodes. They weren't saying that this is the big reveal. They're just saying that this is a reveal, and just because it's guessable doesn't mean it's bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that the way Father Paul is playing it is amazing. His preaching is incredible. His scenes with Riley are genuine. Like,
he's a good dude. Yeah.
When he's laying there with dead ass chomped Joe on the floor and just being like, he plays it so well. You're like, okay, this guy doesn't want to do this. He just kind of fell into this, like, this is what happened to me. My biggest quarrel is, like, he sees this monster and he's like, an angel. It's like, That's not a fucking angel. That's a monster, dude. Why do you think that's an angel?
Yeah, so first things first here, like, we know that he's an old senile guy, so he goes into this cave, he gets attacked, he's all messed up, right? But then he says angel, and then he brings him back to life, this and that. I'm okay with that, but as soon as you're young again, and you see what this thing looks like, you see that it only can come out at night, you need to know that this is not an actual angel.
To add on to, like, come on, you have to know this is a vampire, not an angel. When he's telling the story, and he's young, he looks up at this vampire, like, the morning of, and when he says he realizes it's an angel, it's because he can see they added, like, a slight golden halo to him.
Yeah.
And it's not like the angel halo. It's like the what you see in saints of on the Bible, like the golden circle behind their head. So maybe he saw that and just convinced himself. But yeah, like, what's going to suck blood and be an angel? That doesn't seem right.
And Beverly herself, she shot up through my character rankings in terms of being an interesting person. Mm-hmm. I honestly think she might have even been the MVP of episode 4. But just the way that she dances around keeping her religion to be the forefront of her whole personality and being, like, when she morphs the Christian religion to whatever's going on to make sense, like when Pruitt touches the light and burns and she's okay with it and she wraps it around into being like, this is part of God's plan. God was a sword. He was not peaceful.
Yeah.
I kind of fucking love all that because I thought she was going to, when she started realizing that there was something wrong with Pruitt/Paul, she was going to be an enemy to him. I don't know. I somehow thought she was going to heel turn and be good, but now I'm thinking she's just going to be just full evil.
I always thought she was going to be this indebted God warrior to him. Yeah. Like, she was always going to bend the rules to, I mean, you see it literally when she's arguing with the sheriff in the classroom, when he's saying, okay, he's literally owning her and being like, you wouldn't like it if I brought the Quran. If your kid came in with the Quran, you wouldn't like it. And then she just flips it, right? She does not care.
Dude,
she's single-mindedly
that conversation.
Okay, it's so funny because I actually read some scathing articles about how she's the worst character of the show and just so, like, one note, like, so
really
unchanging, and I'm like, yeah, she's the real villain of this this, like, she, the monster's a villain, but she's the actual villain.
Yeah, I hate her, but I love her as a character. It's like Umbridge. I love to hate her. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think? Because I still don't know. Do you think that Paul Hill told Bev the first night that she walked in, or do you think Bev found out when everybody else found out?
Well, about him being Monsignor?
Yeah, like, do you think he, like, said, hey, I'm going to go by, you know, Paul Hill, but I'm actually...
No. Yeah, so there's the scene where it shows her twice looking at the picture. The first one, you don't see that it's the picture. The reveal doesn't happen until later. But when she comes in and he's sick for the first time, you see her staring at something and she's going like, oh. And it's like dawning on her. And then from that moment on, she's acting like he's Pruitt.
Okay. So she just found out, like, episode 3, but she knew it slightly before.
Yeah.
The other 3 jabronis.
And the other thing about our guess is when it came to Pruitt and Bev is we assumed, or at least I assumed, that Pruitt, meaning Paul, okay, but I didn't say that they're the same, but now we're saying that. I thought Paul was going to be the villain. Like, I thought he was going to turn out being bad.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, all right, if he's bad and the monster is doing his bidding, then Bev will just take his side and he can just be like, I'm the voice of God. You need to follow me. But really, Paul's a really good guy, pretty pure, except for the fact that now he's being taken over by the vices of being a vampire, and Bev is taking it as a sign from God, so now she's following him. But I have a feeling that it's almost going to be like she's the one who's, like, keeping this whole thing going, because he's going to be like, I can't do this anymore, and she's like, you are God.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like,
I thought that until the very last second of episode 4, where now it seems like, okay, he's going to get his juice and he's going to be good for a little bit. And he's still all in on doing whatever he needs to do for.
He's going to get well.
Yeah. He's going to get well. He's going to do whatever he needs to do to get back on track. He's going to be level headed and not be sick for a little bit. And the fact that he's aware of this whole Riley thing, I think he's just totally, I don't know. Like, I'm so back and forth with what I think for him, because I want him to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is, like, a trope breaker compared to the trope that Flanagan's leaning into of them being the same person. And I'll take that trade off any day where he's going to be a gray character and not just a evil character, because he has the best acting performance of the show so far.
Yeah.
I really hope he's not bad, because I love to love him, but I'll learn to love to hate him. But that being said, I think the last guess that we had was that everybody who went to mass and drank the wine healed them. We were saying healed, but we really should have been thinking that they're aging in reverse, because, you know, if Pruitt aged in reverse, why wouldn't everybody else? And you can see it too in Mildred's makeup too.
Is that what it is? Are we assuming it's aging in reverse or just pure healing? Like, I know it is making all the people that have dementia younger and their brains getting back to when they're, you know, all mentally sound and stuff. And it makes sense with Erin too, who's kind of reversing in age and her pregnant body is going backwards. But like, what?
So Henry Thomas's hair isn't salt and pepper anymore. Yeah. The wife's not wearing glasses because she can see. The makeup is getting less old.
She's going to be hot by the end, isn't she?
I think even Woman Mayor doesn't have glasses on anymore. Like, there are certain things where everyone looks younger.
So we said straight up that everyone looks aged up. So, and that's why we guessed that a lot of people, we thought it was flashbacks. Mm-hmm. We thought they were just going to be used for flashback purposes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, Paul, you're on the right track when you're saying that everyone's de-aging. But I also think it's kind of like when you think of like vampires and you're thinking of something that's like immortal, like a vampire doesn't de-age to be a kid. It just de-ages to be like your prime, perfect body. So, like, I don't assume that, you know, they're turning into kids or anything. I just assume that they're getting to be perfect, whatever age for them is perfect. And like, when it comes to Kate Siegel's character,
Erin,
you know, it's de-aging her to the point where she never had the child in her stomach, or even the fact that, like, the child could almost be like an intruder to her body that's being healed, quote unquote, from the blood.
That's what I originally thought, was it was like healing the pregnancy because it's seeing it exactly as you're saying, like an invader. But I think it makes more sense for it to be all age related. But that leads me to my next question, is are we not thinking that the eventual end game of continually taking these vampire blood is for them to look and be like this vampire creature? Is he like a different tier, and they're on, or are they on their way to becoming that if they continually do this? What do you guys think?
I was thinking that the whole time, like when Paul was like getting those like pain attacks or whatever you want to call it, and he was like retching, he was like turning his back, and I was like, dude, is he gonna grow wings?
Yeah,
I was waiting for it the whole time, that's where I eventually think it's going to go. But I wonder how long it takes, because if you think of the timeline, you know, when did Paul Hill take it first in the cave? Mm-hmm. And like, now he's getting these side effects, so the people from Crockpot, you know, how long is it going to take?
All right, well, let's talk rules here, okay? Paul loves rules. Let's talk about rules, okay? So the first thing before we get into the rules, though, is Father Paul dies, okay? So there has to be a rule here about what happens when you die and come back to life, because he could walk in the sun, and he could be a normal person for the most part. He was just de-aged by the blood. But then he starts becoming addicted to blood and vampire like
burning from the light
after he dies and he's resurrected, right?
So far
everyone has just drank the blood. Nobody's like walking around like, oh, the sun hurts, and he never was like that either. He was not killed in the cave. He was attacked and then he was healed all in one shot, because the monster, the vampire, heard him saying angel, healed him. And then there goes his journey. He never had any sun problems, blah, blah, blah. Now we have him dying. And sidebar here, let's talk about him dying, because did you think that Bev poisoned him?
No. Are you saying we should have thought that, or that's a theory?
I'm asking if you guys thought that, because that's what I thought.
So when she gives him the soup and everything, like, I was like, what's in that soup, girl? Like, I thought some weird things were happening with Bev only because she's with the rat poisoning, but I'm like, what would her end game be?
Well, they show a shot of the rat poisoning again in episode 3,
so
right?
Here's what I'm saying here, okay? The dog gets poisoned, okay? Besides the fact that we see that she's a biatch, right? And she's a bad person, that's proving that point, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the poison gets brought in again, like you said, Luke, showing her put it away again. And we know that she is like sprinkling it here and there. But why show us that again unless she poisoned him? And my thought would be that she doesn't really like bow down to him until he's resurrected, right? She's still saying like, Father, Father Paul, Father Paul. But when he's resurrected, she's like, holy shit. I'm guessing that she poisoned him. Same exact symptoms as the dog. He was foaming at the mouth exactly the same way mm-hmm. the dog died. And then she saw him get resurrected. And then she's like, this is God's plan. That's the way I took it. I mean, I don't see otherwise why he would die unless it's just like, oh, you don't have enough blood, so you die.
I mean, I took it like that the first time, but now I think you're right. And Flanagan doesn't deliberately put anything in any shots. Like, I mean, not deliberately do it. And when he focused on the rat poisoning there, I just didn't even connect it. But I think I like that.
I mean, it looks like, too, that she's almost like expecting. She's kind of like standing over him and then like everyone else is freaking out and she's kind of going like, oh, no. But she's still like kind of waiting. And then he comes back and she's like, oh, thank God. Thank God. And then she's like, this is a sign. Like, and then it's the whole thing is like, okay, you're sent from God. You're an angel, you know?
I just don't see why she would poison him. I don't think she's a murderer besides a dog.
Well, she isn't a murderer. She's testing. She's seeing if God will bring him back.
What a bitch if that's true.
I love that angle. Yeah.
Me too. Really, that was a great scene. The actors in that scene were flabbergasted and distraught, and all of those emotions, they were played it very well, because I was like, fuck, dude. Mm-hmm. That was a crazy graphic scene, and so was the Joe scene. Rip Joe.
Oh my God.
He got his head chomped.
Yep.
That was horrible. That, first of all, the poison scene was like on par with Joffrey in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like just choking and like the eyes bulging. And then two, holy shit, how depressing was Joe Colley, man? He finally turning his life around, goes in, just gets, I don't know. What happened? He was like hugging him. He was like basically smothering him. He wouldn't let him go. Joe pushed off of him, banged his head. And that's it? Or did? Mm-hmm. So it's not like Pruitt or Paul or whatever you want to call him shoved him intentionally.
No, he didn't shove him, but it says on the subtitles like he sniffs him. I think he was like hugging him and being like,
blood.
Yeah. We still think Paul's good. And when he did knock him over by accident and he sees him dying pretty much, he's like, oh my God, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. But then he sees the blood and he's like, baby, let's go.
Starts licking it like a popsicle.
But wait, let's go back to just the actual acting performance. Joe Colley was perfect. I mean, you really feel for him in these scenes, especially in the scenes with him, Riley, and Paul. Like scene where Paul is saying, like, to Riley, basically saying, like, just shut up and do it. Shut up and tell him. I know you can. Just shut up and fucking do it. Great scene. Colley telling Riley about his sister and just opening up, and him sobbing when Lisa confronts him in the trailer. I mean, you really start feeling for him. I think that was such a death that you felt it. You felt that
I've been feeling for him since I'm watching that dog die. Like, I'm still sad about that scene. But did any of us, I know we went around and picked someone to die at the end of our last podcast. I think I said Sarah, Dr. Sarah. Did anyone pick Joe?
I don't know. So.
I will say, though, I cut it because we had some audio issues, but I did say the baby wasn't going to make it. You remember?
You did say that.
Yeah, you didn't think it was going to be. Yeah.
Audio issues, meaning someone said something inappropriate.
I can't remember. Probably Paul said something inappropriate.
My bad.
So I was just trying to keep track after doing these notes for these two episodes. I just went back thinking of all the times we've seen people drinking the blood.
Yeah.
Are the only people that we can really trust? Wasn't it just Joe, Riley, the sheriff, and Ali?
Aaron.
No, Aaron.
Aaron's been drinking the blood.
Aaron's been drinking it. She has. Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking.
And we confirmed
pure good.
The test tube.
Yeah, and the baby being gone.
Yeah,
that test tube was crazy bananas.
But
Sarah's
that
like,
is a that ooh. Test tube is a point against what you were saying about Father Pruitt having to have died to come back for him to experience those symptoms, because Erin's blood was reacting to the light and she never died.
Well, I would say that the blood isn't hers; it's the vampire's blood
mixed with hers.
Okay.
That's why I'm saying it would burn. I mean, again, it's just a theory. I don't freaking know.
He's just tainted.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, real quick, let's get back to what we were saying about the rules. So if we say that he died from poison, that's when he starts having the symptoms of, I can't touch the light, I need blood, etc. Everybody else so far hasn't had that. So,
and we could, for sure have seen him in the light, because the first episode when he's meeting everybody outside the church.
Oh, yeah, he's been in the light.
Yeah, he's been in the light. Okay, yeah. Cool. So I guess, yeah, I guess that does hold more weight than I thought, because I thought that Aaron's blood was going to be what proves that wrong, but maybe not.
Yeah, so I would just, I mean, again, I don't know if I'm right, but I would just say that the blood is not her blood. It's mixed with the vampires, and that's, you know, the blood of Christ is the vampire, the sacrament that he calls it. That's the vampire's specific blood. Do we, I mean, I'm jumping ahead here, but since we're talking about it, do we think that Riley is going to come back now? As
I was waiting to talk about this. This is like the biggest cliffhanger ever. Like, couldn't have planned ending on episode 4 better, just for like to podcast. Get our guesses.
Yeah. I know.
I was freaking out.
I would say that it sucks that between 3 and 4, we saw them both and we're podcasting on both, because I had a lot of good guesses mid episode that I'm like, they're already answered, which sucks, because there's only 7 episodes. They've been answering our questions really fast. Yep. But yeah, Riley, I'm so glad that he's gonna be another like kind of Paul good, but he's now has to deal with this like awful thing that was like given to him. It's like an STD or something,
basically.
Yeah.
I mean, well, here's what we have to talk about here. The monster is attacking him and we don't see the end. Like, he's being eaten as it ends. So is he just going to get fed the blood like Paul was, do you think? Or do you think he's going to die and they're going to and like feed him the blood and bring him back? Like, do you think he's going to be a monster? Do you think he's just going to be like,
it's going to force him to be like religious, drink the blood. Like, it's going
to be, you think he's going to own up to that and think this is all religious?
No, I think he's going to have to confront it more than he wants to. Like, you know what I mean? I think right now he's avoiding it at all costs. He's like, fuck this, I don't want it. Like, he prayed with Aaron and he'll go to church, but he doesn't take communion, he doesn't do this and that. But now he's really going to have to confront this head on, which is going to be a struggle for him. I don't think he's going to be a monster. I think he's going to be like Father Paul when Father Paul is his best.
But I'm saying, you think he's going to be a vampire, though?
He's going to need the blood like Paul needs the blood when he, or else he'll faint and shit.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So if my theory is right, though, he has to die and then come back.
Pruitt didn't die. He just got younger.
Pruitt dies when he gets poisoned, is what I'm saying.
I know, but I'm saying he's going to be like Paul when he first hits the
crop pot. So you're saying he's not a vampire, because if Paul gets brought back, he's just a young dude and he's not a vampire yet. He still can go in the light and he doesn't need blood.
He does need it. He's fainting pre him dying because he ran out of the sacrament.
There's
says
the difference
it.
Between I need the sacrament from the vampire and people's blood, like when he's licking blood and he's eating Joe's blood.
He needs the vampire sacrament, I'm going to say.
So you don't think he's going to be a vampire. You just think he's going to be like Paul.
The vampire sack. He needs the vampire sack. But so my biggest question is, the only other person we've seen get attacked is Bull. And we haven't seen him. So the question is Bull dead, or is he just off, hidden right now or something like that? Because whatever happens to him, I think is going to happen to Riley. I mean, Riley's situation is worse because he saw something that he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Bull got like trapped into it. So like, I'm worried that they're going to be worried that Riley's going to obviously tell everybody. So they're going to have to silence him. And I will say, if they do kill him and like, he's just not in the show anymore, I will be absolutely shook. That changes the outlook on how I'm going to view episodes, you know, 5, 6, and 7.
I think that Bull is just blood sucked like the cats. I think he treated Bull like food. And I think that Paul's going to interfere somehow with changing how Riley is going to
like mentor him in a way.
No, you're saying like interfere.
I think Paul's
and not
gonna be like, let's save him.
Yeah,
like, let's not kill him. Gotcha. Let's save him instead of Bull. Bull was strictly food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Bull's such a dumb name.
So yeah, it is. I guess a good conversation topic that this directly leads into is, what do we think the vampire's goal is? Because is he
num?
Like, did he do that to Pruitt, turning him into Father Paul? Like, for a purpose other than food? Because obviously he did. He let him live. Like, is it going to be for a high purpose? Is he making, quote unquote, like minions?
I think so.
That's what I would say.
So that's what Riley will be. He'll basically be a recruited soldier into the vampire army. That's going to happen, right?
He chose
But the problem
guy.
Is, like, they still have their own mind, so...
But they do rely on him.
If anything, what I would say is Riley is going to be the one who's like, this is not God. this is a monster, you know, because he doesn't believe in God. I mean, it might, he'll have to believe in something now, but I still think him is, he's going to be like, dude, this is a freaking monster. I'm looking right at him. He's not an angel.
So that tees up a really good face off of directly Bev versus Riley then.
Yeah.
Because they're both looking at the same exact event and they're seeing what's happening to Father Paul, and they're living in this world of miracles right now, but they're both going to be taking opposite sides. One saying this is God.
Right.
And then the other one saying, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Like, we have to, you know, okay. So I'm all in on that. I think like that's a good,
back to your question.
Idea.
Yeah. I think back to your question, Luke, I'm guessing if you're a vampire, isn't your goal to suck blood and just create more vampires?
Or is it just to live and
like, or is it by, just to suck the blood?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Like, so are they turning, like you said, minions? Are you turning the entire island into vampires, or are you just trying to use it as like a feeding ground? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think we need to know that answer yet.
No, and I think there's, it's different in all lore. I don't think vampires.
Kathleen, what did I say earlier?
What
is that? What a real life vampire does?
Yeah, he goes. Real life vampires would have done. And I'm like, he caught himself before I could make.
I
fun
can't
of
remember
the
what the question was, but I said something. I was, we were talking.
You're like
about
in real life vampires. Yeah. I was like,
in real life,
dude,
do vampires need to stay in the dark? I can't remember something like that. I can't.
But
remember.
I can't.
They're just, there has to be an agenda here more than just surviving, because if it was just about getting food and turning people into soldiers, the first time when Riley saw the vampire and it was during the storm night,
now we can assume
he could have just turned around and did what he did right there, but he didn't. And I'm wondering if there was a reason for that.
Well, I'm also wondering the reason that Pruitt brought him over to the island. He says in the narration, I know a place where like this angel is needed more than any like where else. And so like what happens, he just asked the angel like, hey, come with me and let me use your blood to heal this island and the creature.
Yeah, like he doesn't.
Just
he doesn't,
like, hey, go for it.
Yeah, he doesn't know that the creature's evil. He thinks he created a miracle, so he's think this is my home. I'm taking this angel home, and I'll use it for my home. Mm-hmm. I'll get all my peeps all nice and healed. That's
I'll give everybody the vampire sack, dude.
And what really backs up what you just said there. Even more, besides him explicitly saying that, like when in the flashback saying, I want to bring him to heal the island, is when he sees and talks to Sarah's mom after she's healed in the fourth episode. And he just like breaks character for a second. He's like, I can't wait to tell you everything.
Yeah.
So I do think in his mind, Paul, that is, his end game is to heal everyone perfectly normal. Like this is their new god. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
It's just what's the vampire's end game.
Exactly.
We don't know.
I guess we should probably, I know we're like 25, 30 minutes into this podcast, but should we decide on calling him Paul or Pruitt? Like, or is there a differentiation?
I think when he's young, call him Father Paul.
I'm going to still call him Paul because, but then we have a Paul in the pod.
it's a sexy name. We can call him Paul.
Cool. Father Paul. Yeah.
Just think that there's gotta be an answer to the distinction between when you turn into the vampire that can't touch the light, or when you just need the sack. The vampire sack.
Past just time having the blood in you.
Yeah, like, is it just as simple as, like, if you have enough of the sack in you that you turn... that you turn vampire? Or is it, like I said, that you have to die and you come back and now you're a vampire?
That's a fantastic catch
if
you get
that,
though.
I think that the answer will happen with Riley, and that's why I was, like, getting a little argumentative with Kathleen, just because I wanted to know what you were thinking based on, do you think he's going to just need the sack, or do you think he's going to be full on Riley? Hey, I have to only come out at night and I can't like touch the sun, and I'm going to need human blood to suck on. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually thought, dude, I had to watch this episode twice, and I told Kathleen that I needed it two times. Mm-hmm. I've watched both twice. I didn't catch like the poison thing. I thought I missed, but maybe I'm just wrong, you know, but I thought Riley died. Like, honestly, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, my God, they just killed Zach Kilford off the show.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was the typical, like, you saw what you shouldn't have seen and you're dead now.
Does anyone have it spoiled for them, like, that they know for a fact he's not?
No. But now they're like, I saw it a second time and we're kind of just talking about it. I just assume that he probably will become like a minion or something. You know?
There's too much open-ended, like with his dream, like that needs to get talked about. So I don't think there's really a chance that he's dead. But yeah, I can't wait.
Crazy. Like he was telling Aaron that his dream always ends with the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the dream,
the sun never comes up. It's like about to rise.
He says, as soon as I see the sun, I wake up.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if that has anything to do with the fact that like the vampire, they can't see the sun. I don't know. I'm just being a little crazy.
Is it going to be, is it possible that it's going to be a thing where he no longer goes to sleep seeing the dead girl anymore? Cause I guess if that's a part of like a broken mind, it could, he could heal
the point
where he's no longer seeing that vision. And that's going to be one of the things that like freaks him out. And he starts talking about, I don't know, maybe that's could be something.
We're tinfoiling.
Yeah.
I mean,
vampires never sleep.
I just don't know how that's going to play into it. The vision of the dead girl from the DUI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vampires never sleep. So he's never going to have dreams again.
Oh yeah.
Right. Don't they just like
vampires in real life, not sleep
in real life?
No, they actually do sleep.
In their coffin.
Yeah.
Because of the daylight.
Yeah. They sleep during the day. But it's a whole dream of the girl during the day.
Yeah, I thought it was more meditation, but I will say the point that Riley, Dr. Detective Riley, was able to figure out because Paul was saying, you know, hey, Joe Colley's not going to be here. He went to visit his sister. And
yeah, that was episode 3. He actually tells Riley, he's like, the only person who ever gave a shit about me was my sister. And she died and I couldn't even go visit her. I couldn't leave, blah, blah, blah. And that's how Riley knows straight up that she's dead. But Pruitt, being the same Pruitt that, you know, has been there the whole time, would assume that the sister's alive because he doesn't have that new information yet. Mm-hmm. So he thinks he's telling a good lie.
Gotcha. You know, I think this is a perfect break. I have something I'm looking to pitch you guys. It's a pitch town, possibly. Our first book, Pitch Town. All right, listen, spooky season, it's getting cold out. You want to cozy up with a nice, good book? You want something a little creepy? I got the book for you guys. You ready for this? It's The School Bus by Richard McCrohan. Let me read a little bit about it. On one tragic October day, a school bus on its way to a third grade field trip and filled with children becomes involved in a horrible accident along a lonely mountain road. The loss of life is terrible and send the town into a tailspin. 10-year-old Jimmy Freeman and his four friends have heard all of the stories and rumors of that horrific event and want to go and see the site for themselves. But there are some things that are better left alone. The School Bus by Richard McCrohan is a terrifying ghost story in the vein of Stephen King and Stand By Me, available on Amazon in paperback and ebook or an audiobook at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. The School Bus by Richard McCrohan. If you dare. Also, I fucking love Stephen King and Stand By Me. That sounds dope.
Kathleen's we'll in.
I'm in.
All right, I'm in. I'll try it out.
We're all readers on this podcast.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before we keep going into guesses and theories and tinfoil hats, I just want to like tip the cap to a lot of the good monologues in this one. Bev and the sheriff going at it in the classroom. I think Riley and Aaron's after death conversation they have is really good and intense and something that I think is interesting. I will say that a lot of the religious speeches and monologues, I had to watch them more than once because I can't absorb them. I'm like, I don't know what any of this means. Like, I wish I was getting the references when Bev is like dropping parts of the Bible or some
sword.
Yeah, like things like that. Like, oh, that's Book of John. Remember Book of John? That's Lamentations, bitch. I'm like, God, I wish I got these references.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like when she says it like that, when she lists out like, okay, all these events take place in the Bible and they're awful things. And I'm like, wow, like I guess when they're being preached, they're never really being said how awful it actually was. But like saying, being sent to Egypt to kill like the non-believers. And then she goes on to say, we flooded the entire world when everybody stopped believing, like talking about Noah's Ark and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. So there is like just mass murder in the Bible so many times. And she's like, hey, this is just maybe one of those times. It's a modern day miracle. It ain't pretty, but it is what it is.
I think one of the big questions we have now, right before Joe gets chomped, he says that old man wasn't celibate while he's looking at the picture of young Pruitt and saying like, oh, like this is uncanny. You could be a son like this. I wouldn't be surprised. This old man wasn't celibate. And then he gets chomped. You think it's Sarah's. It's got to be Pruitt's daughter, right?
That's what Emily got me thinking, because there's a few different signs. First, it was like episode 1 or 2 when Paul comes in, she goes, oh, John. And Sarah goes, no, like, sorry, Father Paul. She thinks you're my father, which.
Yep.
And then two, when Mildred, Granny Millie, is coming around, she's starting to get like more and more cognitive abilities back. And when she's quizzing her, when Sarah is quizzing her mother, she says, who's my father? And Mildred like pauses for like a long time. And then she goes, "Hey, mom, did you hear that? Like, who's my father?" It's like she almost had to like double think about it. Right. I didn't catch that. Emily did. I got to give props to Emily, unfortunately.
God, I feel so dumb because I just watched this and I just like didn't have time to process. But that's so obviously what it is. Like, she says George. She like takes a break and I think she says George. And I guess that's the name that she's been told forever. But yeah, that's like 1000% what it is.
And when he sees her for the first time, meaning Father Paul and then Millie, when she's younger and she's more cognitive, that's not just like two friends being like, "Hey, what's good?" That's a lover.
Yeah.
He's like crying. He's crying because he's so happy.
So what are the implications of that for Sarah herself? How is that even going to matter? Because
we don't know.
I think it's just going to be like a scandal on the island, like that happened, and it's not a big deal to the story, except for the fact that it exists.
I think it will be a big deal. I just don't think we know how it's going to be a big deal yet.
I definitely take back my guess that Sarah's dying. I think that is enough for me to say she will not die because of the fact that she's going to have some connection. Maybe he's full vampire and sees her and is going to kill her, but he's like, "That's my daughter." Well, I don't know that I could envision a good scene like that.
Did we say that we don't believe she's taking the sacraments?
No, she's not.
Sarah's going to be one of the ones that is eyes wide open, clear eyes, full hearts.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, wait, we listed it earlier, but we should definitely list it again. Who is the ones not taking the vampire shack? Well, it was Riley. Not anymore.
Joe, the sheriff, and his son Ali, Riley, and now Sarah. Sarah's the one I missed. So and then Joe's now dead. So there's still only four of them. And if we're not counting Riley, that's really only three people we could trust. And I just, based on like scrolling through Twitter sometimes, like I'll see, you know, people hype up Raul.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done much. I'm actually surprised by how little he's done so
far. Every time he's on screen, I'm like, "Oh, I missed
him." He's going to do some shit. There's going to be some crazy things here. And he's obviously like all the seed planting happened this episode about how obviously he's not doing any of the community. He's not Christian. Right. And he says Christian. So weird. Do I say it weird?
Christian.
Yeah. I think he's just going to be like the source of light and he's going to be the best and everyone's going to love him like Owen. It's going to be awesome.
Just like we love him.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I just want to say that I thought that the vampire in his trench coat and top hat was freaking hilarious.
Dude, I thought it was horrifying at the end. Like when he walks in and he just like walks through.
Well, first of all, he reminded me of Hill House.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. The guy that Luke sees.
Yeah. But I just thought like it was cracking me up. I'm just like, this vampire just walking around in a trench coat and a hat like.
That makes episode one so much scarier. Like Riley was chasing that monster on the beach. Mm-hmm. Like that's insane.
And we see how fast he could fly when he flew at Riley. So he obviously just like flew away.
Do whatever he
when
wants.
Riley was chasing him. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't really have the answer as to why he just didn't eat Riley at the time. But
so is the reason that the cats just got all drained for blood was just straight up food. Again. And then it seemed like he was getting a little more antsy and he left the upwards, went to that abandoned house, killed. What's his name?
The bowl.
Bowl. Yeah, so it seems like he's getting more and more antsy to get food sources.
Like, if he's given the vampire sack, like when he's cutting himself, does he need to be sucking blood to get more?
I think so. He needs to be.
Yeah, he needs to replenish. So maybe
definitely.
Because maybe the reason why he didn't kill Riley in the beginning is obviously the whole point of his plan, if he has a plan, would be to make sure this town believes in the godly part of it. So if. I mean, Bowl disappeared. I mean, you could disappear Riley, but if Riley was found dead, people would be like, "What the hell's going on?"
Yeah.
I don't know. That's probably not a good argument because you could probably just make Riley disappear. But
and we talked a little bit about it on the first podcast about his level of consciousness, the vampire that is, because we originally the only clue we had was the knock and then the knock back in the chest. But now when he walked in at the end of episode four, he shushes him after he starts talking. So he just like is completely there. I don't know if he can talk, though. Without mimicking voices. Right. So that's what we don't know yet.
I just can't believe we didn't get anything yet for that.
Like, I know.
I mean, they did it so blatantly with Bowl that I was like, two more episodes out of seven and we didn't get anything with the mimic thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm over the shape-shifting thing.
Yeah,
like, I don't think 100%. That's anything.
Yeah, we were wrong on that one.
So creep count, I think the Raul scare made me jump.
Yep.
It's not scary. It's just him reacting. I wouldn't have even seen that if he didn't react. You know what I mean?
I actually had to rewind. I wanted to know if it was in the window the whole time or just for that turn. And it was just for that turn.
Yeah.
But again, like, what's the vampire doing?
He's like, grrr.
He's just like, let me just listen in on this conversation.
Why was he on Aaron's roof in the first episode? It doesn't really make sense yet. There has to be some more goals going on.
Agreed. I was thinking that he was there because they were talking against Christianity, kind of.
Do I need to kill these mother truckers?
Yeah, basically. Ooh. So anytime someone's going against them, I was like, ooh, and sees them out her window. But Aaron doesn't really make any sense.
The kids, when they're on the island, like, they're supposed to be altar boys. Right. They're doing reckless shit. That counts. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I hope that could be connected.
Yeah.
Because then that really means the vampire is consciously leaning into the Christianity thing.
Yeah.
And I want that to be a thing, and that the show's named after Midnight Mass. So I love it all. I want that to be the path he takes. Too. Yeah.
I was thinking about Hyman, like, a lot of the times when he's just looking in the window.
Hyman, it's like, from what, Paul?
From the Magicians. We cover the Magicians. But it was just so funny. He's going around, like, looking in the window. I was like, oh, this is a really cool storyline. Like, I wonder how it's going to turn out. Like, oh, man, this is a really dramatic conversation between the sheriff and his son. This is crazy.
They're getting really heated with each other right here. I love watching this. By the way, Paul, yeah. How hilarious would that be if we didn't say the Magicians thing and people were just like, Paul's like, this reminds me of a Hyman.
Yeah, I guess I needed to clarify there.
And speaking of the Magicians, because we didn't bring it up in the first podcast, I just need it to now. If you haven't seen the Magicians, season 3, episode 1 is such like a carbon copy kind of idea that this show kind of reminds me a lot of, right? Like, I guess this is more for Magicians fans, but we have the whole priest, like this secluded island of people that are just doing anything the priest says. I think it's just a great reference.
Yeah, the priest is using an illusion of a monster to make them follow him.
Yeah, it made more sense after the first one, because now we're thinking
not
that
as much, because
I'm really
guy.
Thinking, yeah, Father Paul could eventually have a good guy moment in the end, even if he has to sacrifice himself to save his daughter or Riley or something like that.
Now that we're talking about other shows, I might as well give our props where it's deserved. Our friend on Instagram, Here's Johnny 49, called us out for not saying on the pod that Hot Mama herself from Haunting of Hill House, Carlo Gugino, was the judge that sentenced Riley in episode 1. No FaceTime, about 25 seconds of dialogue, but freaking Mike Flanagan got our girl back on the show.
It's amazing.
That made me actually giggle that somebody name dropped Hot Mama from our previous podcast.
Love it.
Hot Mama.
That's the best. Speaking of that, I am so annoyed staring at Mildred, Granny Millie, saying, who is this actress? If it's someone I don't know, then fine. But I kept being like, is that Carla Gugino? Is that her? I want it to be her.
Yeah. It doesn't look like her now that she's young, I don't think.
Like a slightly younger, you don't think that looks like her?
I don't think
so. Are you saying that it could still be her?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I would love that.
I would freaking love that. But I don't know. I don't think it's her, but I think it's, like, again, we said no looking up just in case, but
she has a very distinct tonal voice. And I'm telling you, like, when I watched episode 1 and Riley was getting sentenced, I randomly looked to Alex and said, is that Debbie Allen's voice? Like, I clocked the voice, but I got it completely wrong. So I thought it's interesting that it is somebody I knew. I just really fucked it up. But she does have that kind of lower tonal voice. And I don't think that Mildred has that.
Yeah.
So I'm really stretching. It's a stretch.
We all want Hot Mama on Midnight Mass.
If it's not Hot Mama, guesses on the board. Are we ever going to be seeing an episode of this season where we think Millie's hot?
Millie's so hot.
So you guys know what she looks like.
No. I'm just saying.
In general.
The priest doesn't break his celibate vow for an ugly girl.
Yeah, right.
True, man.
His number one thing this whole time has been making sure his babe gets to be young again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really.
Literally, he's like, I am not missing this sacrament. I will come at midnight to Sarah's house to give my girl Millie her vampire sack.
Yeah. So you can get everything nice and perky again. But that was the question, is like, is it actually going to be like they go back to their prime, like Ed Flynn, like the dad, like is he gonna go back to like 30, like 25, like what's considered their prime, the emotional, spiritual prime? Or like,
I mean, he's already de-aging. They definitely made him look less old.
Like, I would have totally recognized him if he looked like this in episode 1, which I didn't in episode 1 off the first scene.
And the mom is definitely looking younger, too.
Mm-hmm.
So my question was, when Aaron said that her baby is not there anymore, when she goes into heaven, she's going to be aged up into a prime. So I was like, all right, are any of the other characters that take the vampire sack going to age up? But then you go to Lisa, and Lisa is apparently going backwards is what we think. So like her prime was behind her.
Yeah, I still think there's a healing factor to it.
Definitely.
But it I don't know. I don't know if there's necessarily like Lisa should be like that should be almost her prime. So she shouldn't really change much like age wise physically, except for the healing factor.
You just trying to drop some X-Men?
Yeah, man.
Is that what I'm saying?
She's X-Men.
My other thing about Millie, old granny Millie, is do you think she could be Jamie from Bly Manor? Amelia Eve? Kathleen. That actress?
It can't be. I'm obsessed with her.
I would think so?
I would know. And she, I mean, she's British in real life. So if she maybe put on a different accent, because she had that like accent.
Yeah, it was like Irish to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like she wasn't the au pair, but I'd love when she's like the au pair.
Poppins.
Poppins, yeah. Her voice was very
distinctive.
I don't think I've ever heard her in anything else. So this could trick me, but I was thinking her. It's definitely not Nell.
Luke would have sniffed that out in 2 seconds.
I know. But yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know, but
Luke
I love
would give
her.
Now all the vampire sack necessary to bring her back to her prime.
Now I'm just constantly thinking, like, how does Flanagan pick some people?
Yeah.
To go through different shows and like why, I'm not gonna say like anything wrong with Raul, but like, why is he the one that goes through a couple and then from Haunting of Hill House? Like Luke was in
Oliver, Oliver Cohen or whatever his name is. He's the man.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think,
but he got
I think you cast based on the roles. I mean, this is the first one where Flanagan wasn't going off of book content. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think he could have written specific roles for specific people. But the other two, I mean, I guess he could have still. But this one is a very obviously religious. So I think it works really well that Raul plays a Muslim. And yeah. I saw some...
That character was probably written.
I saw some good feedback from Raul. People of Muslim faith like really giving him props for the way he portrayed it. It's like some of the best
good
that they've seen.
That's
good
awesome.
Representation. Yeah. Because I'm not sure that what Raul is in real life.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's that. By the way the tweets went, I'm not sure. But people say he was portraying it very well. And that's great. Because I love him. I want him to get all the roles.
Yeah. He's the man.
I want his accent back, though, because hot.
His acting was amazing. He's put in such a weird position. Like, obviously, him and his son have had multiple conversations. Like, they had long conversations about it. Like, what do you do when your son, like, goes looking for other religions? And he says, like, last thing he says, I'm not going to stop my son when he starts to go look for God. But at the same time, it's like, with all this crazy shit happening on this island, like, he's going to get tricked, like, almost. It's, like, the wrong idea.
Right.
Exactly.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Because when he's talking to his son and they're having that one-on-one where the vampire makes the scare, he says it's not magic. It's not like he's just referring to what the miracles
amazing
that are happening
scene
here. And it just feels like Sheriff and Riley, they're going to work so well together when shit starts hitting the fan as like the two point men. And I could just see it being like those two versus Beverly and the vampire. And then Father Paul is going to be the one that switches from bad to good in the end. And like that could be a good way to do it. Because he seems like super gray and who knows what he wants to do.
I can't see how Father Paul at this moment still thinks that the monster vampire is good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get that it's causing
he's tainted
miracles,
now.
But it's like, just look at the thing, man. Like, and you know now you're like turning into something crazy.
I was actually thinking that Annie, the mom, was going to be the one to turn into, hey, the church is up to something, because the like last conversation Riley has with her right before he leaves to get munched on, like all of Christianity could be correct and could be right. But I know for a fact, Father Paul lied to me. So now I'm thinking Annie's going to be looking out and almost trying to trap Father Paul in a lie, especially if Riley goes missing or something, because that's the last thing she says. Yeah, if there is going to be a group coming together and going against like Bev and Father Paul in the church, I think it could be the sheriff and honestly Annie, which is crazy because she's like one of the most devout ones.
Yeah, I mean, if Riley has the situation where he can only come out at night and he needs blood, then he's obviously going to have to disappear himself. And if that happens, then I believe like 100% you're right that Annie's going to be like, where's my son? Right after he said Father Paul's not to be trusted, he disappears, you know? Also, Kathleen. Kathleen just flips me off. I just want to give her some props because we saw in Riley's room that he has the Seven poster, but the very, very corner of the left side of his room, you see the M. I don't even know. You see like EAM, not
you see EAM. I watched it. Yeah, I saw it.
And you see the side of Drew's face, like very slightly. And I go, that's a Scream poster.
So I was wrong. In episode one, I said that it came out in 97. So Seven came out in 95 and Scream came out in 96. So, but yeah, I mean,
dude, you guys would have been such boys with.
Yeah, Riley would have been my freaking boy, man. Right? Zach Guilford.
I would have made out with him big time.
But I think a couple more things we should do here before we can close out this episode is we should hit a couple of the other peripheral characters that we kind of haven't talked about much and just get a vibe for what everybody's feeling about them. And then I think we can hit the last couple of big theories and probably call it.
Okay.
But I do want to talk next about maybe my biggest complaint so far of the show, which is not a complaint at all. It's just what I came up with when I was thinking of things I didn't like so far. And I just don't give a shit about Warren, his friend, or Ali, who I thought he was going to be a great character, and he still could be because he's going to be so connected with the whole, you know, the religious.
I haven't taken the sacrament yet. Yeah.
I don't know why they like kind of guessed up Warren, right? Warren, I don't know why they guessed him up in the first episode as being anything like I'm more interested in the parents now at this point than him, especially the dad. I thought the dad had a good turnaround episode because I said it on the first podcast how I think I misread him, where I thought he was going to be a huge dick the whole first time, and then the second conversation he has with him in episode one or two, it was a complete turnaround. And then the boat conversation in this pair of episodes was just so good. I feel like the dad was not what I expected, and he wasn't like a religious freak.
Wait, that boat conversation was devastating.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, he's at least trying. I thought he was totally going to be just like a shut Riley out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean,
he ends up with saying
him.
"I love you" too.
Yeah, I mean, he was real with him. He was like, I had an issue that you didn't care about the island or our job and you thought you were better than us and you left us.
Yeah.
He was telling him the truth. I mean,
so I guess what I thought was he was going to have that mindset the entire time.
Yeah.
Rather than him already flipping.
It's so fucked up looking back because the entire conversation is talking about how Ed has been mad this entire time at Riley for all these horrible things that he's done. And then he's like, well, then I realized it's how you were raised. It's not you, and it can't be your mother because she's perfect. So I'm sorry, you're a horrible, shitty child. Like, what the fuck kind of talk is that?
I was waiting for him, meaning Riley, to be like, Dad, it wasn't you, it wasn't Mom. I'm an alcoholic and I had a problem.
Fuck that.
He didn't say anything. How fucking surprised,
dude? How funny was it though? They go out there, they're about to set the nets, and the last thing Ed says, "We should go back before it gets too late." It's like, bro, you come out here to have a conversation, you didn't even fish once.
I just assumed that this was going to be his moment to deliver his letter, quote unquote, and give his speech to his dad about saying sorry or whatever.
I don't think he gave Riley much to answer to. Like, I thought it was more like a no offense, but, and then savagery. Like, it doesn't.
Oh, really?
You saying I love you at the end doesn't mean it's like, I was mad at you for a long time, and then you killed somebody. So, like, I'm, like, really mad at you. I mean, I still love you.
I am super mad right now.
Like, you're my son, so I love you, but, like, you're kind of, like, annoying. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I took it. I was like, this is savage. I don't like it.
I, like, was a complete opposite of you, though, Luke. Yeah. I want to see a lot of Warren. I want to see Hooker. I want to see Ali because they are – like the altar boys, they're the ones that see all the shit, so I'm sure they're talking about like weird things that Father Paul is doing. Another character that I really want to see is Sturge. He is the ferry captain, is that what he is, like on the island? But it doesn't really matter. He is one of the three that, or four I guess if you count Bev, that saw Father Paul die. So he was like getting weird glances all episode four, like especially when Father Hill like wouldn't come in to mass and Bev was talking on the altar, and especially when they go to the, you know, see Joe Crowley's body. So I wanted to add him to the list of, you know, team anti-church or whatever, you will.
Can you imagine being like, it's one thing if you want to say Bev is just blinded by her faith or whatever, but literally the Scarboroughs and Sturge walk in and see Joe laying there dead with the blood trailing to Father Paul with it all over his mouth that he just ate it. He just sucked the blood. And they're just like, holy shit, what the hell is going on? And Bev's like, this is God, bro. Like, this is literally an angel.
Well, when I was taking notes on that scene, I did kind of say that obviously Bev starts playing the card about, if you don't believe in God, then your daughter's going to go back in the wheelchair. And I don't know, because I think I got a bad read on the mayor from the first two episodes as well. And maybe that is the only priority. He's not really caring about like being a good person as much as like he wants his daughter to be healthy.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's fine. Because the first time he talked a lot was, remember when he was being all sketchy on the beach? About like, I guess that was just a weird scene, because I don't know if that's going to matter at all. So I don't know. I think it made sense why he went along with it. But whatever the other guy's name was, I don't really know.
Yeah,
the ferryman. Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to what you were saying about the kids, I was pretty surprised that Warren hardly got anything to do. And maybe he will now in the next three episodes. But Ali could be interesting if we start to find out, like you're saying, Raul, the sheriff, like figures out the scheme and he's like, the sack is turning everyone into vampires and we need to fight this. But Ali still believes the miracles, his own son.
Yeah.
Like if his son takes the sacrament or something and they're actually like butting heads, I think that would be like pretty cool to happen. And maybe that'll bring him back into the main plot.
I was going to say, for Warren, I mean, at least when Father Paul used the flask for the wine, that perked his ears up and made him go, that's weird. So at least Warren is noticing things. He's not just like a da-da-da character. But I also think that I don't care about Lisa at all.
Yeah.
And and her speech, like I liked when she was like, you reached through time, Joe Colley, you stole from me. That was a sick line. But I was also like, chill, bro. Like, because I love Joe and she was freaking out. And I was like, I don't know.
I wonder if we are going to get an answer more to how he shot her.
I don't know. But my whole point to that was, I agree with Luke. Don't care about the young people, including Lisa. I don't care at all.
Yeah, they teed him up to be the thing in the first episode. And then he just stepped away from him for a little bit. But yeah, when I was also taking notes on that scene when Lisa goes to Joe's house and is talking through her, my first like couple notes are saying like, wow, this is kind of a trope breaker too, where she's not going to forgive him. And then she forgives him right away. Yeah. So I was like, this is, it was expected that I thought she was going to go there and forgive him. And I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. She still let it rip though, but
yeah. But the thing is,
make that man stop.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to get more on the shooting, because that seems good enough. Like a complete explanation of the whole hunting accident, and Joe's dead now, so he's not going to come into play. I don't see how that's going to be relevant again.
What if they feed him the sack and he becomes a vampire?
I was thinking that too, but isn't it?
I think it's past.
It's too late, right?
Yeah. Hit the body and shit.
Yeah.
That's just the thing. I feel like I don't know
the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. Like, we've already talked about it a million times. We don't have to do it again, but there is a distinction between what makes you a vampire and what makes you just need the sack to heal.
Something else about Sturridge, I was thinking, we never actually see the body dumped, correct? We see Wade and Sturridge roll him up in the carpet, but that's the last of it.
Yeah.
I was waiting for Sturridge to like say, okay, I'll take care of it, and then actually keep the body as evidence later on to use going against the church. Because, you know, I feel like if you don't see it, you can't assume anything.
Yeah, it's true. But I think they're both just like, what the hell?
Yeah, freaked out.
Beth did a really good job of just deflecting from Wade saying, what the hell did you do to him? To like, if you don't bury this body, you are not a Christian and not going to heaven. It's like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
Right before Riley shows up at Aaron's and then decides to go to find the vampire and Father Paul, I actually thought the reveal was going to be that he found them hiding the body, because it was supposed to happen at night.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were going to be like walking back from what they did, and he'd be like, what's up? Like, what are you doing? Like, I didn't realize we were going to get the reveal right there that Riley finds out that there's a monster who likes to wear a top hat and a trench coat.
All right, before we end, I have one more book for you guys from our boy Richard McCrohan. It's called Salvation Mountain. College professor Jeffrey Cole and his three student assistants travel to the deep backwoods of the Appalachian Mountains in northern Georgia to do research on Father Divine, a rural preacher that 100 years ago created a fanatical religious cult that overwhelmed and murdered the mountain people in the dense backwoods of Salvation Mountain. But they find that the zealous fires are still burning strong and that the wages of sin is death. The novel Salvation Mountain by Richard McCrohan is available on Amazon paperback and ebook, and also in audiobook on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Salvation Mountain by Richard McCrohan. If religion is the opiate of the people, then this is crack cocaine.
Ooh, spooky season, baby.
Spooky season, baby. Spooky season. More religion. I mean, if you're into religion, then shit.
Like me.
Read that book.
Wait, only fiction over literature. But okay. All right. So, yeah, I feel like throughout that last couple of minutes of conversation, we did hit all the rest of the peripheral characters that I had written down. Is there anyone else that you don't think we talked much about? I know we didn't really talk that much about Aaron, but we hit the big points because it was all connected to the blood and the vampire and the pregnancy.
I have a feeling we'll get more to her in the next few episodes.
Did they bang?
No, they're just snugging. Yeah,
okay.
I would say no.
They used to bang. Because I
think she was saying like, oh, like you're going to come over again tonight. And I think that was going to be the night. I think he was going to get some and then he got cock blocked by a vampire.
Also, she lost her baby and he decided to go confront Father Paul. These are my final thoughts. Okay.
These are my final thoughts.
Father Paul lying to Riley saying that he's going to visit his sister could mean so many things. It could mean he's visiting his sister's grave. It can mean that Joe lied to Father Paul and said, I'm visiting my sister, even though he wasn't. I don't know why that made Riley go, I'm about to fucking, like, I need to tell my mom to watch out for him. Like, it could have easily been Joe lying. It could have been Father Paul misspeaking and meaning to save her grave. Mm-hmm. I just think that that alone wasn't enough.
Father Paul specifically said, yeah, Joe is going to visit his sister and he may not be back for a while. So I think, like, you wouldn't go and visit a grave for like an extended period of time.
Okay, but also it could just be like Joe's like, okay, I'm not staying here anymore. Like, fuck this, I'm going away. Unless Riley was going to go back and be like, yo, his sister's dead, and have a conversation.
Yeah,
with
no.
Paul.
I mean, what do you think he was going
to
do?
He literally was like, I know Father Paul lied to me. Oh, Watch out for him.
I took it like he's just going to confront him and be like, bro, you lied to me. Tell me the reason. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all I thought. Cool. I didn't think he was like going to be like, you're a piece of shit or
you're
anything.
A vampire.
Yeah.
Say it. I'm a vampire.
No, like, I agree with you. Like, there could be a million reasons why Father Paul said what he said.
How good was Father Paul's facial expressions and body language when Riley comes in right at the end? He just looks up at him as he's like praying and goes, oh, and then just like proceeds to just close the door slowly, like nothing to see in here.
Wait, I have one more funny visual.
One more final thought.
Part two.
My last funny visual is when Riley goes to AA and Father Paul is just standing on his stoop like a fucking wacko.
So I took that as he was still testing because it was kind of twilight if he could go out into the thing.
But the way he was standing, I was like,
I know, me too.
But you saw that like in another scene later when it's finally not day anymore, he does like he puts his hand outside the ports to test it. So, but yeah, he was so creepy. Like, if you're Riley, I'd be like, we good?
You good, bro? He basically was like that. Yeah. He's like, because Riley, during the montage, which we haven't brought up, which is a good montage, it was like Riley's parents dancing, the back was like everyone was happy. I'm like,
everyone's
shit's about to go down.
Happy, yeah.
Riley and Father Paul were like laughing in their sessions in the gym.
Again, we've said it. Father Paul's a good dude.
Yeah, like Riley's coming around at least. So when he goes up, he's like, yo, bro, come on.
And that could be part of the reason where he reacted so aggressively when the Father Paul lied to him because it was the first red flag that he had evidence
he's
for.
He's like, I thought we were bros, dude. Don't freaking lie to my face like that. But, and why the hell do you not set up the coffee after the first meeting? That's it. The coffee table is not there anymore after the first
meeting. Dude, I saw that and I got so pissed off. I was like, inconsistencies. I was like, why is it not in the second meeting? So my final thoughts of this episode is, or going into episode 5, I should say, is I think Riley could be dead. I hope he's not, but I think he really could be. I think there's going to be a lot of people coming out and speaking out against Father Paul for being sketchy. Also, are we going to get a good conclusion to Robin Sparkles like showing up in Riley's dreams? Like, if he's dead, that's done. Or is it going to be like, you know, Specs from Bly Manor? That whole shit kind of got resolved like episode 4 or something like that at the fire. And then you never saw him again.
I love Specs. I am going to tell you right now, Riley's not dead. There's no way. That's going to be the best part of the back end, is that he is going to be a fucking vampire or just bloodthirsty or like a Father Paul. Like, there's no way he's dead. He's also just such a big name actor.
Yeah,
that isn't the way he would die if he was going to die, I think.
For outside of TV show making reasons, there's no way he's dead.
Not to just completely shut you down, Paul, because I do like the idea that, like, I wish the stakes were a little higher that he could be gone. I just don't believe in myself.
That's why I thought there was a freaking real chance that instead of him going to confront Father Paul when he's looking at Aaron's house, he was going to walk in and she was going to be dead. And that would have been something they could have realistically done without it being like you're killing off the main character.
Yeah, Paul, to your point, I kind of think that the Robin Sparkles thing was not necessarily like finished, but he did have like enough conversations with the father and Aaron to be like, listen, like I screwed up and it ruined my life and I'm dealing with it. And I mean, really, what else is there to talk about when it comes to her? You know, what other point to it will there be?
I agree. I think everything has been said about her. And now she might just be a good way for Riley to emotionally have some really good emotional scenes. I got one final thought. Is there any world where this ends poorly and not like quality wise, but like where it's not a happy ending? And literally like the last episode would be the whole island of everyone that's alive still being vampires and going to midnight mass. And like that could be like the ending.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I'm like rooting for them, I guess, but if it ended all in devastating whatever, I kind of would like that.
I know. I think that would be a cool shot.
This town sucks. Like their lives suck anyway. It's like, let's just make this a cool non-tropey ending where it's like
we're all just chilling in church, drinking blood. Father Brewitt's up there. Like, let's
take shots of blood,
dude.
Doing body shots off each other, blood.
I mean, I definitely had the thought of like the entire island becoming vampires, but now that you say that, like the only time they can come out is nighttime. So they're still going to be religious vampires and they're going to like have mass like straight up in the middle of the night.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Sorry, Paul. Did you have something else? I accidentally jumped in on you.
We didn't see if the vampire were circumcised or not. So still a mystery.
So now that you're saying that, Paul, like we have to assume that Father Paul is going to try to make mass at night now, right?
Yeah.
So is that midnight mass? Like, is that the point of it? Like, if he's going to stay the father, he can't come out during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So for some reason, he's going to have to try in the next three episodes while people still believe in him to make mass at night for some reason.
I love that end thought. And I really hope we get the circumcision answer. I think that's
yes.
That is a big deal.
What are we going to have? Like, Riley fighting vampires? Like, I just don't see how it ends happily. Like, they're not going to be able to kill this thing.
I don't know. I really don't either. I don't know how it's going to end.
Eternal daylight.
It's going to have to be something to do with the daylight or what? Stakes through the heart? Is that like the thing?
Yeah, I think that they've done the daylight thing so much that it's going to have to be something with the daylight. Like, you're going to have to trap them.
Vampires! All right, baby. Good. I think that's it. That was our episodes 3 and 4 of Midnight Mass. We'll be back with episodes 5 and 6 sometime next week. If you like what you heard, go back and listen to our Hill House and Bly Manor coverage. We also cover things like The Boys, The 100, Alice in Borderland, all the Marvel stuff. We also want to shout out to our patrons. We really appreciate you guys. We're going to drop some more Patreon episodes, which I know you guys are loving. So we'll get goofy on those again soon. And check us out on Binchtown TV, on Twitter, Instagram, our website, and everything else. Stay spooky. Get spooky. Thank you and good night.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.